2 Samuel 15:24. And lo, Zadok also, and all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God. You remember, David is being exiled from his throne. His son Absalom has raised a rebellion against him, and he's having to leave with whoever is willing to go with him. Zadok was one of them, and all the Levites were with him. And they brought the ark of the covenant of God. They set down the ark of God, and Abiathar went up unto all the people until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king, that's David, said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. Now, in the providence of God, this phrase in verse 25 is exactly the same phrase we just saw on Sunday morning in our study in Luke. Our study in Luke took us back to Genesis 6 because our Lord referred to the days of Noah. And we saw there how that Noah, though all of mankind, the thoughts and imagination of his heart was only evil continually, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And this is the same word that David uses here, if I shall find grace in the eyes of the Lord. Translated favor here, same word. If I shall find grace in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again. He'll do something for me. And we'll see what that is in a minute. And think about the circumstances under which David said this. Now, his own son Absalom, as I said, has raised up a rebellion against him, against his authority as king, given him by God. And it says in verse 13 in this same chapter that the hearts of the men of Israel were with Absalom. And David is driven from his throne, from his home, again. He knows this road, doesn't he? He's lived in caves before for a long time. And he's leaving in shame, knowing that his own sin has brought it all to this. And with a handful of loyal supporters, he's leaving town in shame. And the Levites, the priestly tribe, are coming with David and bringing the ark. Well, why were they doing that? David is exiled, and everybody knew what David had done. They knew why that this had happened. But the Levites are going with David and bringing the ark because the Levites did what God said. Everybody, most other people in Israel were kind of, you know, putting their finger in the air to see which way the winds were blowing. What am I going to do? What's my best bet here? You know, what's the safest thing to do? But the Levites, their life was the service of God. According to the Word of God, they did that which pertained to the worship of God in the tabernacle and with the sacrifices and in all of God's worship. And how did they know what to do? God told them what to do. Their life was obeying what God said in the service and worship of God. So God had instructed that things be done a certain and specific way and without fail in his worship. And we know when folks deviated from that, some of them were stricken dead. And the Levitical priests carried that out to the letter. And so it's no wonder that politics didn't determine who they followed. They followed God's king. While all the other people were being threatened and bribed by Absalom, and their hearts one, the Levites were serving in the worship of the Lord. And so all they took into consideration in all of this, and it was a time of turmoil and confusion, who's king, who said what, who's doing this, who's got the numbers, who's got the authority, who, you know, what do we do? The only thing they thought about is, who does God say is king? That's what a Levite would do, right? That's what their whole life was, what did God say? And so they followed David. Notice there in verse 25, it says, the king said. He doesn't look like a king. He's not wearing his royal robes today. He's in traveling clothes. He's not acting like a king. He's not sitting on the throne. Kings don't go hide out in caves and such. And it would do us all, I believe, well, and I believe this is the lesson here throughout all of our lives, to ask ourselves and answer for ourselves this question. Who is God's king? Who is in authority? Who is on the throne? Who has God put on the throne? Who does God say is king? Because the world says a lot of things. They say a lot of things. And you see how that's a lesson from our text. If we don't think about that quite a bit, who has God put on the throne? If we don't think about that quite a bit, we might just get to thinking it's us. We might just get to thinking we can do what we want. People think that every day. We might just get to thinking we don't have to submit to God's authority or God-given authority in this world. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's what we will do if we're not often reminded of this consideration. What the they said, God has told us who the king is. There's no confusion on about that. We're going with you. We live, we die, whatever. We're going with you. Christ is on the throne, and the authority that he gives is his authority in the home, in the church, in society. And consider something well here. Those who followed Absalom during this time, they did so because it was a good bet. It seemed like the safest, most advantageous thing to do. They were probably right about that. You know, if you're going to look at the outward circumstances, and you could have easily justified it, couldn't you? You know, these are lessons for every day that we live. I don't doubt for a second that some were saying, well, David was a good king for a while, but he did commit that horrible sin. It looks like maybe God's done with him. But did God say that? And Absalom defended his sister's honor. He looks like the good guy here. But yeah, but what did God say? What did God say? Absalom killed the man that defiled his sister. Looks like he's the one defending her honor. You know, it's always easy for sinners to justify defying God's authority. It's so easy, isn't it? It's so easy. And it's always wrong. And it's always tragic. There are always consequences to that. This situation is not complicated, really, though it might seem so. It might seem very confusing. Who is God's king? Did God make that unclear? Do we walk by faith or do we walk by sight? Do we go by what God said or do we go by what the world thinks is right? What our own hearts, for that matter, think is right? You see the picture here? There goes God's king. But boy, man, it looks like, you know, he's getting what he deserves. Look what's happening to him. And look at the condition he's in now. And look, Absalom is an up-and-comer. And he looks like a good guy, you know. He's been kissing everybody and defending everybody's cause and promising things to people, you know. looks like he has all the support. Absalom, he's young and he's strong and vibrant and ambitious. And David is despondent and mourning his own sin and leaving in shame. What are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Well, the Levites said, "We're coming with you, and we're bringing God's ark with us." And it's very important that we see a stark contrast here also. King Saul had represented, as you remember, man's will. God was the king of the Jews, and they said, "We want a king that we can talk to, that we can see, that we can, you know, like everybody else. We want to be like everybody else." I don't think, by God's grace, I don't want to be like everybody else to you. Man, boy, what a thing to say. We don't want God to be our king. We want to be like everybody else. So King Saul, he represented man's will, man's way, man's works. And David, of course, represents Christ all through his life. And look at the difference in the way these two men conducted themselves when it came to the ark. The blessing, the favor, the presence of God as manifested by the ark. You know what that ark is. That ark's Christ, and it's the presence of God. It's where God met with sinners on that mercy seat and communed with sinners, because the blood was splattered. The blood of atonement was brought there by the high priest. In 1 Samuel 14, King Saul is king at that time, and he's, of course, a disaster. We looked at that as we went through 1 Samuel. God had abandoned him. God said, "I'm done with you, because you won't listen. You didn't listen to what I said. You didn't obey the voice of the Lord. And so I'm done with you." Saul was absolutely useless in the fight against the Philistines that's recorded in that chapter. 1 Samuel chapter 14. But in verse 18 of that chapter, Saul said, "Bring hither the ark of God." He had not inquired of God concerning what to do in the matter that was before them. They were in war, at war with the Philistines because of Saul's stupidity, and they were outnumbered. They were overwhelmed. Saul's decisions and actions had gotten Israel into a hopeless situation that was going to end in destruction if God didn't intervene. And God did intervene, and God used Jonathan and his armor bearer, if you'll remember, and deliberately bypassed Saul. Even Jonathan didn't tell his dad what they were doing. They saved the whole nation of Israel without even telling Saul, because he would have messed it up. He was an idiot. He was a disaster. He was a godless reprobate, according to the word of God. But Saul says, "Bring the ark." Because he considered it basically a good luck charm. You know, God had blessed the people of Israel. It was a symbol of his presence with them. It was a symbol of his favor. And so Saul thought the presence of the appearance, the symbol, was important, though God had in actuality already abandoned Saul and told him so. So he's just playing religion now. And so he says, "Bring the ark of the Lord," so that everyone there would see, of course, that he was doing the right thing. You know, bring the ark. Though he was a godless reprobate that only cared about the outward religious appearance of things, just like the Pharisees in the New Testament and all anti-Christ religion in any age, let's get all the trappings of religion. God has abandoned me, but I want that ark going before us, you know. I want the symbol of God's presence there. But David, in stark contrast to that, said, "Don't bring the ark. Take it back. The ark belongs in Jerusalem." It was a long road to get the ark back to. Remember, David danced before the ark. They brought it back to Jerusalem, where it belongs, where the worship of God was supposed to be. And the ark was supposed to be. And David didn't care what things looked like. Think about this. This would have been a great political move for David. He could have said, "Well, you know, Absalom has wrongly taken over the throne, but the ark of God is with us. Clearly God's with us and not him." That would have been a great political move. But David didn't care about that. That's not what he was about. It would have looked good and may have even caused David to get more support than he did. You can imagine people are looking at Absalom and David deserves what he's getting. And Absalom is young and strong and seems to have defended his sister's honor. And he's promising things and telling everybody, your cause is just, you remember all that, and saying all the right things. But maybe if the Ark of God, wait, if the Ark of God is going with David, that makes me think twice maybe. David's still got the presence of God with him, if you're thinking in religious terms. The appearance of things was meaningless to David. What did David want? He didn't care about the appearance of it. He wanted the actual grace of God upon him. You see that? If I find grace in the eyes of the Lord, it doesn't matter where I am, it doesn't matter where the ark is. God will bring me to him. Boy, I like that. I don't care much for Saul. I see a lot of Saul when I look in the mirror. And I don't like it. Verse 25, the king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city, if I shall find grace in the eyes of the Lord. I don't care what the political move is here. None of that makes any difference. He will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. I'm not going to finagle and manipulate things to my advantage. I'm going to look to God, and I'm going to wait on him to bless me. And when he does, everything will be to my advantage. Even what's to my disadvantage will be to my advantage. If I can just find grace in the eyes of God. What David in effect is saying, part of it is, this is not about me. Let God's glory and God's ark and all that, the worship of God, remain unchanged. Just because I'm leaving, no, that doesn't change any of that. Just because I've sinned and I'm suffering the consequences of my sin, it doesn't change any of that. It's not about the ark being where I am. I want to be where the ark is, but the ark belongs in Jerusalem. So if God will just have mercy on me, he'll bring me back. But listen, I want to be where God's presence and favor are. That's the symbol of the ark. Was symbolic. Now, God was with David when he was in exile from Saul. He's living in a cave. God was clearly with him. So it was a symbol, though, of the presence of God, and the worship of God, the favor of God, and a very important one. And David said, I want to come back. I want to be where the ark is. It's not about disdain for the ark. It's not about disrespect for the ark. I want to be where the ark is. But that only happens one way. And remember now, the ark is Christ. The blessing, favor of God. God meeting with sinners and communing with them instead of throwing them in hell. Because of the blood, the precious blood brought by the high priest on the Day of Atonement. Christ and his favor. Christ and salvation in him by his precious blood. And David said, that's where I want to be now. And this clearly and beautifully and without question, David's end goal is to wind up where the ark is. I want to be where God is worshipped. I want to be where his presence and favor are manifest. And that happens one way. Grace. Grace. Not by me manipulating things. Not by me doing what looks, advantageous to me. It comes by grace. If I'm going to end up where Christ is, it's going to happen by the grace of God. Look just how much David depended upon God in this statement. You talk about committing yourself. And that's what a sinner, that's where God's got to bring us now. If God doesn't want me, then let him do what seemeth him good. But if he'll have me, he'll bring me home. He'll bring me home. I always think of that poem, "I'll to the gracious King approach, whose scepter mercy gives. Perhaps he will receive my touch, and then the sinner lives. I can but perish if I stay. I am resolved to try. For if I stay away, I know I must forever die." So I'm going to go. I'm going to commit myself to him. I'm going to cast myself at his feet. And whatever he does will be right. I know that. Look how much he depended on God. God must have grace upon me in spite of my sin. I'm sure enough getting what I deserve. David wasn't upset with God. He wasn't upset with Absalom. He wasn't upset with the people. He wasn't upset about it at all. He just said, "Here I go. You guys, if you're coming with me, we better get, because we're going to die otherwise. We've got to do the prudent thing here. We've got to get out of here. Leave the ark here. And if I find grace, God's brought me home before. And he may just do it again. In spite of the fact that all this is my fault, in God's eyes there must be grace for me. And also he must bring me. That's what he'll do. If I find grace in the eyes of the Lord, what will happen? He's going to bring me where he is. Oh, how do you find God? You don't. He finds you. That's how you find him. He finds you first. That's how. How do you get to God? He comes where you are. That's how you get to God. That's what David's saying. I want to be where God is, but he's going to have to bring me. You remember when Simon said, "Lord, bid me come to you on the water"? How else is Simon going to do that? How's he going to get where Christ is? And the Lord said, "Come." Oh, that's so beautiful. Cast in your soul upon him. I'm persuaded that he's able to keep that which I've committed unto him. I've committed it unto him against that day. This in picture and type, what David is saying there is John 6:44. "No man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him, and I'll raise him up at the last day." The only way that all of this is going to work out to my advantage and I'm going to be able to worship God again, commune with God at the mercy seat again, is if God has grace on me and brings me home. That's how that works. That's how it'll work for you too, if it does. And as David said here, if I find grace in God's eyes, he will bring me. He will bring me. It's not if I find grace in God's eyes, then I've got a shot. That's the what passes for a gospel in this world, but not here, by the grace of God. If I find grace, that's what grace is him bringing me to Christ. That's what grace is. Grace is not God giving you a chance. Grace is not some magic advantage in life that gives you a leg up, you know, and then you've got to do something to make it work. Grace is God putting you in his Son, and his Son being to you life and redemption and wisdom and forgiveness and righteousness and peace and everything you need, everything you don't have, everything you'll never have except in him. That's what grace is. You see that? If I find grace in his eyes, it's done. And then God's... notice the next thing he said. God's got to show me Christ. He's got to show me the ark. He's got to show me. Christ not only is all things to me, but I see it that way. You think about that now. You think about what a blessing that is. Christ is all things to me, and I see him that way. I see him as such. That's why I have hope. That's why I have faith. That's why I have everything I have. We've got to have that, don't we? We must see Him as our Savior. We've got to see His precious blood as having washed my sins away. That's what He's talking about here. You've got to show me. He'll bring me home and He'll show me the ark. Show me both it, the ark of God, the Christ, and His habitation. Hebrews 2:9. We don't yet see all things put under Christ. But we see Him. We see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, and crowned with glory and honor, that He, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. And that word there means some of all types, according to Strong's Concordance. For it became Him for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, and bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. We see Him. We see Him who suffered. We see Him who suffered for us. We see Him that by the grace of God tasted death for us in our place. Took the wages of our sin. Took our sin and their wages. And died in our place. Well, what else did David say? He'll show me it. He got to show us. He brings us and He shows us. And look, if God's grace is on me, I will be brought. I will see Christ and I'll see God's habitation. I'll see the habitation. That word is abode. And you can see why He's using that word, because He's leaving His abode. He's leaving the city of God, the city of peace, the worship of God, the place. He's leaving the ark and going, He don't even know where. And this was David's desire. It was a bad time for David in a lot of ways. But he utterly resigned himself unto the will and grace of God. And that is the lesson of this text. It doesn't matter what your circumstances are. It doesn't matter what seems advantageous for you and what seems disadvantageous for you. Ups, downs, none of that matters. Do I have grace in the eyes of God? Has He brought me home to Him? Has He shown me His Son? And do I live where He does? Psalm 27. I want to look at it together. So look at Psalm 27. The habitation of God. The abode of God. In other words, I want to stay where God is. I want to be where God is. I want to stay where God is. And the way that happens is He brings me. Got to bring me. I can't make it happen by making it look like it's that way. I'm resigned unto His will. David had sinned greatly. He didn't know if God was kicking him out or not. God anointed Saul king and then said, I'm done with you. You think maybe David was thinking, maybe God's done with me. He has every reason to be. Maybe He's done with me. David was resigned to that. But he said, I want to come home, but God's going to have to bring me home. It's going to have to be by His grace. He's going to have to show me His Son and bring me home to Himself. Psalm 27:4. One thing have I desired of the Lord, and that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. That I may dwell in the abode of the Lord. That I may live there. It's not a place we visit. We don't come to church. We are the church, or not. We don't even come here to visit God today. That I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord. You think about that now. Not because I need this and I need that, though we do. We need Him. We need Him every hour. But David said, I just want to look at Him. I just want to see how beautiful He is. And to inquire in His temple, that word is to seek. I want to behold His beauty, and I want to find out more about His beauty. That's the idea here. I want to see Him better. That's what that word inquire. I want to see Him and know Him better and better and better. For in the time of trouble, He shall hide me in His pavilion. Well, this is one of those times for David, isn't it? In the time of trouble, He shall hide me. In His pavilion, in the secret of His tabernacle, shall He hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. And now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. My brother read a minute ago, He prepared a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. He taken care of me, protecting me right in their face. I'll be lifted up round about me above my enemies. Therefore will I offer in His tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. Do you see that? That's what we do. We come here to worship. Why? Because He's it. He's everything. His beauty, that's all we want to see. That's all we care about. One thing have I desired. One thing. Really now. And look. I enjoy life just like you, I'm sure, do. I enjoy the things that the Lord provides. But you ever just sit and ask yourself, what really matters? What is all this? You know, my favorite saying, most people are buying beans to eat beans, to get the strength, to go to work, to get the money, to buy more beans, so they can eat and get the strength, to get the... That's it. That's all it is. And again, I enjoy life. I enjoy going to go on vacation. Going to enjoy myself. Going to relax. I like, you know, doing stuff. I love my family. I'm thankful for the things that God has given me in this life. One thing have I desired of the Lord. Can we honestly say that now? The glory and beauty of God is seen in the face of His Son. Is that all we care about? Or is that just kind of something we think about when we don't have something else going on? It's one or the other. I will sing praises unto the Lord. Verse 7, Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me and answer me. Don't leave me. I know, see, here's the thing. We know that because of Him and what He's done for us, we're safe. I know that. Do I need to hear it again? Yes. Tonight. And I'll need to hear it again real soon after tonight. But you already know it, Chris. Yeah, but I still need to hear it from Him. I need to hear it. Simon Peter said, I think it's meet to put you in remembrance of these things as long as I'm in this tabernacle. Though you know them. You know them. Oh, but isn't it good to be reminded? And see again His beauty, His power, His grace, His love. So, Lord, when I cry, have mercy and answer me. Speak to me. Comfort me with the gospel. When you said, verse 8, when you said, seek ye my face, my heart said unto you, thy face, Lord, will I seek. Remember when he said to Thomas, be not faithless, but believing. And the next thing out of Thomas's mouth is, my Lord and my God. He's on his knees, he's on his face before him. When the Lord speaks in power now, when he speaks in power, he says, you seek my face. What is my heart going to say? The one who turns hearts in his hand as the rivers of water says, you seek my face. What's my heart say? Lord, I'm going to seek your face. That's how that works now. That's how that works. I tell you what, if he don't say that, you're going to seek everything but. And I am too. And you know that's right. And Lord, don't hide your face far from me. Put not thy servant away in anger. I don't know when David wrote this, but you see how it applies to our text. I sin every time I open my mouth. I sin every time I think a thought. Every time I take a step, it's in the wrong direction. Don't hide your face from me. Don't put me away in anger. You've been my help. I was a sinner then, and you had mercy on me then. Don't leave me now, neither forsake me, O God, of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. The whole nation of Israel. It said, you know, all the men, all the hearts of the men are with Absalom. Well, there were some exceptions to that, but there must not have been many. Because that's the way it's worded, isn't it? The hearts of Israel are with Absalom. Yeah, but who is the Lord with? That's all that matters. The Levites said, that's what we do. We listen to God and do what he says. God said, you're king, David, so here we come. I want to be a Levite in that regard, don't you? When my father and mother, it doesn't matter who, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path. Isn't it plain? That's what we need, too. It's not complicated. The gospel's not complicated. How many times have I said that? How many times have we seen that? Lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies, including my own wretched heart. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. And I had fainted. You ever wonder how David, look at his life. We get up and brush our teeth in the morning. He got up and strapped on a sword every morning, every day of his life, just about. How in the world? We think we've got pressures and stress. Wow, how in the world did you hold up to something like that? I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord. How do you see the goodness of the Lord? By faith. God got to give you faith. In the land of the living. And here's, he closes with a little advice, a little teaching of to us and all, everybody, himself and everybody. Wait on the Lord. David learned, he didn't have much choice, did he? I believe the Lord will teach us to wait on him if he has to bring us to the place where we don't have any choice. You think he'll do that? Be of good courage. If you're waiting on him, you've got nothing to worry about. And he'll strengthen your heart. You think you can't do it? You know why you think that? Because you can't do it. But I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Wait on Him. Depend on Him. Hang upon His mercy. Commit yourself. David said, either way, the Lord may not have me, and maybe He will, though. Maybe He will. I'm going to wait on Him. I'll wait on Him. May He give us grace to do that. Let's pray. Lord, thank